Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. It's we got to the middle of the week, and so that's a good thing.
That's amazing, if you don't mind my saying. it's amazing Wednesday here on The World Transformed, and we're doing part two of our surprising news crazy questions sequence. And so I thought for Amazing Wednesday we would do the how have I described this? This is the biggest news surprise of them all. No surprise to us, actually, but a significant surprise to a lot of people. Maybe regular listeners of this show won't find it surprising, but some people really do seem to be startled by it, and we'll get to it in just a few minutes. But first, we'll start with, they both kind of deal with the same theme. We've got this article written by the president for Wired called Now is the Greatest Time to Be Alive. And I'll tell you, Stephen, when he's looking for work, I guess, in January, if he wants to sit in with us and do some shows, I'm just saying, right? He's right in line with us here.
Well, I would say based on that article, I have to completely agree. That is some good stuff. That is some good stuff in that article. He knew his audience and was writing to the audience of Wired, and therefore, was sort of in our wheelhouse there. We enjoy that kind of stuff, and so maybe that's part of it. But man, Great stuff there in that particular article.
So, I'm going to read just a quick section here. It's just a little introductory blurb. He says, "We're far better equipped to take on the challenges we face than ever before. I know that might sound at odds with what we see and hear these days in the cacophony of cable news and social media. But the next time you're bombarded with over-the-top claims about how our country is doomed or the world is coming apart at the seams, brush off the cynics and fearmongers. Because the truth is, if you had to choose any time in the course of human history to be alive, you'd choose this one, right here in America, right now." I say this whenever I'm asked that question, right? I mean,
I didn't realize that was a quote from the president's article, Phil. I thought that was something you wrote. Because, I mean, that's really stuff we say all the time. And
he might have gotten it from me. I don't know. Maybe I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But,
we're not the only ones who think this, but this is very much in line with really the whole theme of this of our show, The World Transformed, is that we are living in the greatest time ever, and really you don't get that from listening to just a normal news broadcast. I mean, you are convinced after every news broadcast that we're on a slippery slope to hell, and it's a handbasket or not. We're on our way, right? But
absolutely,
that's just not the case. If you take a broad view of history, it's just not the case at all.
If you look at who we are by and large, and what we're able to do, and the life that we experience, compared to people who lived at almost any other time, virtually any time in the past, virtually any people who lived at any time in the past, you're better off, right? I mean, you take the average
right.
human being living on the planet today and compare that average human being with, you know, even one of the luckiest, most successful people of a century or two ago, certainly any time prior to that, and that average person is better off. I mean, when you net everything out. And within, you know, certain, like, national settings, right, you know, within the U.S. or within Western Europe, a lot of countries, actually, that person is so much better off than the average person back then that it's, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, so much better off than the we've talked before about how, you know, poor people in many ways in the U.S. today live better than a king of England would have 300 years ago. It's just, you know, it's the simple payoff from the law of accelerating returns. It's the human imperative in action. And we just, you know, we sit on top of this heap of improvements that have occurred since then, driven by first the Industrial Revolution and then additional accelerating technologies on top of that. And it's, you know, it's the best time to be alive so far. That would be the only that would be the only maybe edit I would add to this formulation, you know. Because
you recall the modernization of Romeo and Juliet. Leonardo DiCaprio was in it. You recall that? I think that was the late 90s, I believe, when that came out. I think it's interesting that in order to make it work in a modern setting, instead of it being royalty, it had to be feuding, mafia families, gangs in a real bad setting, in a very violent area. That's the only way it would have made sense in a modern setting, is to put it in the worst possible circumstances you can live in the modern world. And otherwise, it just, that story wouldn't play.
And that's very interesting, because when you look at who those characters are, obviously they're nobility, they're like creme de la creme of the time that they're in, and you know, it's just, well, boys will be boys. They get in fights and kill each other. I mean, this is the world they lived in. You know, and you're absolutely right. At that point, it would have been late 20th century America. To find a population in our country that had some kind of similar experience, you actually have to look at the people who are the most, you know, like underprivileged economically, the people who are doing the worst, because average people, middle-class people, certainly rich people, that's just not their reality, not by a long shot. You know, your life isn't in danger because you looked at somebody funny, or, you're on the wrong side of town or something like that. I mean, you know,
make a hand gesture at somebody, that starts the whole blood feud, you know, I mean, just, that doesn't make sense at the country club.
Exactly.
It just doesn't.
It sounds insane to, you know, to most people, and it's very sad. And it needs to be corrected that there would be any segment of society where that's, you know, still kind of the way things work. But it just, it only goes to show you how, as you said, how far we came over that period of time. So here's some crazy questions about the president's piece in Wired. And I assume he had something to do with it, right? He at least read it over and said, "Yeah, this is fine," right? You know, if he didn't dictate the whole thing. I mean, we don't want to be naive about how much writing the president of the United States actually has to sit down and do. This is in stark contrast to most of what we've ever heard from President Obama. In fact, not in a necessarily terribly critical way, because it's in stark contrast to virtually what we ever hear from any politician.
That's true.
It's very that you hear this, because there's always some big, you know, threat that needs to be dealt with. Usually represented by how the other party is doing something that you have to be saved from. Maybe I'm cynical because we're in the campaign, but it seems that there's very little talk of this kind of thing ever in politics or in government at all. And I think my first crazy question is, you know, why isn't technology the major thing we consider when we start talking about, and I listed three things here, but you could probably list others, when we start about jobs or education or the economy, right? Because we, you know, we talk about these things all the time. Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, healthcare. You know, that's a huge.
Well, healthcare, good one, yeah.
Yeah, technology should be the prime consideration when discussing that. And instead, we get in the same battles, right versus the left, over this and fight, you know, last century's conflicts, basically, is what we're doing when we do that. It shouldn't be so much a battle of the right versus the left. It should be up versus down. And it's kind of a shame. You know, and it's and here's the thing: the president who wrote that article, my politics are so much different from President Obama's normally, but the man who wrote that article, man, he and I could work together. I would get behind, I could get behind that, you know, you could accomplish some things with that guy. So,
if this was the philosophy going forward, I'd say third term. Let's give it one more shot here. I think he's got it. He's got he's on the right
track. Choices. Third term is looking would be sweet anyway. But
it's looking pretty good anyhow. Absolutely,
it's looking pretty good anyway. But I see what you. Yeah, I see what you say. Sorry, my politics are creeping in a little too much. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, well, we're talking about, you know, why isn't this the prime consideration? So we got to talk about politicians a little bit. Let me give you an example, okay? I was listening to a podcast today. This guy who does – he sells training and teaches people how to, like, build their own Amazon businesses. And he's real serious about it. You know, they sell small ticket item consumer goods. And a lot of it he imports from China. So he's talking about, you know, he takes this trip to China and he talks about these incredible deals you can get on stuff there that you then become the supplier and you set up your Amazon store. And you, anyway, whether the guy's on the level or I assume he is, it's, you know, he's one of the number one podcasts on iTunes. So hopefully it's working. But anyway, as I'm listening to this guy, I'm thinking, you know what? We could actually leapfrog China here and start producing our own cheap stuff that people could sell and make money off because we got 3D printers now, right? There's some handoff between how much it costs to ship all that stuff over and all that kind of stuff and how rapidly you can produce certain items with a 3D printer, right? There's going to be an inflection point there eventually. And at some point, a lot of this stuff that we're – shipping over somebody with, you know, not the cheap consumer one, but like let's say a really good 3D printer, you know, a top of the line model 3 or 4 years from now, they could actually start putting this stuff out. And since it's not something everybody would have,
I think that 3D printer is the wrong technology. You're right, Phil, that there's an inflection point, but it would probably still be injection molding of plastics, just like, you know, so much of what they produce over in China, but instead of it being manned with cheap laborers, it's manned with cheap robots. And there's got to be an inflection point there. Now, the 3D printer is ideal for one-offs. You know, if you need just one or a few of something, you use 3D printers. But you'd use different technologies to get the economies of scale. But you could do that with sufficient automation here in the United States. So.
Yeah, and where I'm going with this is that's just my crazy idea, which we've been on now with using the correct technology, the one that would really reach the inflection point. But you know, when you hear Donald Trump talking about bringing the manufacturing jobs, all he's thinking is we're going to build the factories back and we're going to have people working in them, and it's going to be like China. I mean, he's not, or at least he's not describing this next. By new technologies, right? His mindset isn't there. It seems like for some reason politics throws you into the middle of the 20th century. That's the only way politicians can think.
Yeah.
It's like the post-war era,
and
it's so defining for everything.
Well, if we have to compete with developing countries on the basis of the price of labor, we're going to lose that battle every single time. That's
right.
We can't win that. But instead, we automate our way out of the problem, and as part of it. And the other part of it is we do well the things that we do well, and let them do well the things they do well, and trade. You know, but right now we're trading at a deficit, and that's the real problem. So, you know, I think that can be addressed with automation. And you're right; nobody's talking about that. They don't work. We certainly don't hear the left or the right talking about we need to automate more. You hear them talking about the dangers of automation and losing jobs.
Instead of looking at it as, well, you got all these people who are being put out of work anyway. You know, what if you cross a corner, you know, you turn a corner and suddenly that automation has become a technology that passes into the hands of consumers, as we're always talking about things do, right? They go from nation states to big companies to people. And when that happens, you know, it's entirely possible that folks can, you know, start generating some income doing that. I mean, it's like
and I'm
going to
tell you, why is it
manufacturing? Go ahead.
Okay, so either way, we put people are out of work, right? I mean, whether we automate or we send it overseas, people are out of work. Why is one preferable to the other? I'm going to tell you why. The reason is if we automate here, we've got something we can tax. You can't tax China. You know, I mean, you know, I suppose you could with trade barriers, but that's been proven to not work economically. So, we automate here and then tax it. That's how you handle that problem. So, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So bottom line is they don't look at it through the lens of technology, and that's the thing that's going to determine how we do it. It's like education, okay?
Yeah.
Bernie's free college, which became Hillary's free college for everybody, right? Free college for everybody who under 250,000 or 50,000 or whatever it is,
yeah.
Free college for everybody. It's like, okay, great. Free college is a fantastic idea. Anybody can have a free college education online, right? And that way you could do it. It wouldn't break the bank. You make a good online program that anybody can have. And, in fact, a lot of people would just go to that.
Neither Bernie nor Hillary mentioned MIT, you know, MIT's innovations. No one has mentioned that. That's the way you do that.
Right. Yeah, because they think – well, this means you have to pump a lot of government money into sending people to a brick-and-mortar school for 4 years and living in a dorm and eating in a cafeteria and, you know, pledging a fraternity, whatever you have to do. But you don't. I mean, it's like there might be other models of doing this. There might be ways to actually, you know, generate the kind of largesse that, you know, that gets their base so excited, and it would really work. And the way to do it is through technology, and they don't see it. And that's really frustrating.
I just find that. I feel your frustration. I really do.
I find it really painful because I read this article and then I say, you know, crazy question number two is, why doesn't anybody ever run for office on this platform? Wouldn't you vote for this guy? I mean,
well, there are times that, you know, pretty much all candidates, you know, will stray into this area, but they don't stick with it. I've never seen a politician build a platform on what technology can do for us, and let's build the technological infrastructure that will, you know, make a brighter future for first our country and then for the world as a whole. You know, because you improve the world as a whole if you improve us. So.
Sure,
you know,
but even if you can't get them to, you know, technology is going to drive it. If somebody would just run on the best time to be alive, right? If they could just run on the whole, the world is actually, you know, a pretty decent place. I think it would make a tremendous difference.
Status quo, that's a hard thing to run on if you're Donald Trump challenging the status quo. You know, now's the best time to be alive after 8 years of the, you know, other party. But it's still.
Well, it's true.
I think somebody
as optimistic as Ronald Reagan had to run on, you know, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, right? But his overall story was one of continuous progress that had been slightly set back 4 years. So, you know, let him in office and he can fix it. I guess that's about as close as a politician's ever going to get. Although I think JFK, I don't know that he ran on it, but once he was elected, that was kind of his theme, right? You know, the torch has been handed to a new generation.
Well, the question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, was what Reagan ran for re-election. He was saying, hey, you know, this 4 years has been great. How about four more? And and he got himself reelected.
Oh, no, he said it when he was reelected. He said it against Carter, too, though. He said it in 1980.
Oh.
And that's how he got elected.
Okay.
It was like, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? The implied answer, no. But you're right.
Okay. He ran again with
great effect
thing,
and won in a big landslide.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
See, I told you kind of a rhetorical question at that point.
Yeah,
yeah, we need that. I want somebody running on how awesome they've made everything, you know, not
that's true.
That would be good. Well, what do you think of this one?
Question. Imagine a different Donald Trump, someone who's running against the status quo, building a platform on what technology could bring us. I mean, that could
right.
be done, you know, and it's not. It's just flat not done because it's the old right versus left always. First and
right.
foremost and always. That's what it seems to be. So maybe that's a problem with the two-party system. Maybe there's a technological party in places like England and Israel and places like that that have multi-parties that have to build a coalition. I don't know, but it seems a shame that we just have this old framework that we're dealing with in the United States.
Yeah, well, and the other big driver he's got, of course, is the whole insider versus outsider, the elite versus everybody else. But that one, too, is just kind of, you know, you get all the traction off the good guys versus the bad guys. And it's not to say that there's not important differences between the left and the right, or that, you know, it's entirely possible. In fact, I, you know, and I'm not going to disagree if you say that we've got kind of a corrupt elite kind of useless political class in this country. I mean, you know, those are good points. And then they need to be addressed, but there's this like bigger picture of human evolution that gets completely left out. And I think that could really drive a lot of sunlight into the,
equation. Even if a politician were to, you know, stay doing the same left-right battles, if they would occasionally shine a little of this sunlight on the
yes.
just to be a little cheery every now and then, you know, I mean, they could, whether on the left or the right, they could Reagan up a little bit, you know, I mean, they could
yes.
be the happy warrior a little bit by just talking about, hey, this is, you know, we live in a great country. Things are getting better all the time. And let me be a part of why it continues to get better all the time. You know, that's the kind of platform, that would, I think, be attractive to people instead of driving people away. And,
well,
so
President
people
Obama
to turn
has done
off
great
the
work. He's done great work writing this piece. Hopefully his farewell address will be along these lines, too. Hopefully he keeps with it here in the waning days, that he stays on message, because it is definitely – it's a good message. Well, our second story, we're going to run out of time on this one, but it's the one we've said so many times. The world is getting better and nobody knows it. And this is an exercise we've done, but the author talks about putting a study together, asking 8 questions about how things are going in the world, and people get them all wrong, right? They think world hunger is increasing. They think people are getting poorer. They think more people are dying in wars, you know, just all these kind of counterintuitive good things that are happening. People don't know about and they completely miss out on. But, you know, the big headline, you know, the unexpected story, the surprise news story of history, human history, is that things are going pretty well for humanity, right? We've made some great things happen in the last couple centuries, and it gets missed. One of the things that I thought was really interesting in reading this piece, and that leads to my crazy question number one on this one, is, you know, does everybody thinking things are bad, is that what helps us keep moving forward? You know, if we just appreciated how great everything was all the time, we wouldn't be motivated to, you know, to take the next step. Do we have to be miserable in order to keep progress progressing? What do you think?
Well, that's, I think, who are the most productive people you know in your life, Phil? I mean, are the pessimists more productive than the optimists?
That is an excellent question. I'm not sure.
I think you can be an optimistic person and be extremely productive. And so I'd say, you know, if the fact that people get so pessimistic about the future often leads people to lose hope and stop trying. And
I see what you're saying. So
there's that danger. And then being optimistic about the future, you know, it could encourage you to, hey, let's, you know, let me be a part of this. I can see where we're going. You know, you know, imagine a young person that's interested in STEM saying, you know what, we're going to Mars. I want to be a part of that in some way. And and then, you know, and they go off to, you know, around here would be Louisiana Tech or MIT or, you know, someplace like that. And that's, to me, you don't have to believe that that things are everything's going away or to make something great. You know, I think you can be optimistic and be one that is a world changer.
You know, what might be necessary is some level of dissatisfaction with your current state. That might be necessary.
Yeah.
But I think
To see the problem initially, but you have to be able to take the next step to believe that improvement is possible. You can't be a complete pessimist, right?
Right.
You know, you need to be a realist enough to see the problem, but an optimist enough to address it. And President Obama.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was just thinking President Obama mentioned Norman Borlaug, who was able to develop the dwarf wheat that's feeding the world. You know, that guy was not a pessimist. He was a hardworking, optimistic guy who saw a possibility of doing something great to feed the world. And, you know, at the same time, people were writing, you know, so who changed the world? Was it the guy that was writing the that novel, not the novel, but the, you know, Future Shock or whatever? Is it the author of Future Shock or was it working at the same time, Norman Borlaug? Yeah.
You think it's Paul Ehrlich? Yeah.
Yeah. So who do we owe, you know, the future to, our present, more to, Norman Borlaug or Ehrlich? I think it's probably Borlaug. So anyway, that's just me. I am optimistic, so I tend to want to plead the case of the optimists because they're too often looked down upon as dreamers. So
yeah, well, you know, I'm going to go that direction. So I'm just trying to bend over backwards to see if there isn't something to it. And I think if you bend over backwards, there is something to it. Is that some level of seeing that you need to fix something helps. And that helps move us forward. To your point, you have to believe there are possibilities. You have to believe that you can find a solution, you know, or it's insane, right? It's absurd. You wouldn't even try. Ultimately, I guess there's a little combination of, I won't even call it pessimism. I just call it dissatisfaction and optimism that really drive this thing. So, in fact, to answer my second crazy question, the follow-up, is it wrong to do a show like this one? Oh, no. It is so right to do a show like this one because what we're here to do is talk about all those possibilities, right? So if you're dissatisfied with how the world is, get a hold of some possibility. Right. That's the thing that can change everything. Right. And that's what I liked about going back to President Obama's piece was, you know, he really spoke to possibilities realized and that there are even better ones ahead. You know, I think that those are the two things that people really have to have in front of them to assess where we are in this world. You've got to look at both of those things. What possibilities have been realized and which ones are going to be realized. And, you know, humbly, Stephen, that's what we're here to do, right, is help people see some of those possibilities.
Agreed.
And with that, can you believe it? We're out of time. We're going to come back on Friday and talk about some more unexpected stories and the crazy questions they drive. Been great talking with you, Stephen. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.